ball tipped away. Curry has it. Curry, 6 seconds, 5 seconds, dribbles on Harris, takes a three. Got it! Curry!
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
Today is Thursday, December 4th, 2014, and you are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram. And with me, as always, my boy and producer, Scott.
Scott here.
And I'm proud to announce, joining us for the first time, assistant GM of the Warriors and a member of Forbes 30 Under 30 list for sports, Kirk Lagom. What's going on, Kirk?
Hi. Thanks for having me. Excited.
I should admit this to you right off the bat. Scott and I are both over 30, and we've never been distinguished anywhere for any list whatsoever, so you're slumming it a little bit today.
All right.
We appreciate you doing it, man.
Yeah, happy to.
Let's start just random stuff about you, general background. Where are you from?
I grew up most of my life in Woodside, down on the peninsula. Went to Menlo School, which is right in Atherton, after going to Woodside Elementary, and then went to Stanford. So I'm what you would call born and bred.
Yeah, exactly.
Peninsula,
right.
Bay Area.
Love to hear it. You a Warrior fan growing up?
I've
as well?
Been a Warrior fan my entire life. I used to joke that, you know, my favorite player was Keith Jennings growing up.
And immediate credibility, Kirk. Nice to play yeah. there, buddy.
And then I realized at some point, and nothing against Keith, but I realized at some point I was like, how did that happen?
Yeah. Mr. Jennings, what are you talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, he was the point guard for the Warriors, so he was my guy.
I was all fired up to try to prove that that wasn't true, you know, that you hadn't been rooting for these guys forever. I've got no legs to stand on now, yeah. man. Keith Jennings, absolutely. Obviously, we know that Joe Lacob, your family, was a part owner of the Celtics mm-hmm. for a while. Did that screw with you rooting for the Warriors? Did you stick true to the Bay? Did you have to go over there? I mean, how does that work?
You know, it's good that one was on the East Coast and was on the West Coast. Yeah. Made it a little easier, and we never had to meet in the playoffs, which was great.
Yeah.
If the two teams did play each other in regular season, I always rooted for the Warriors. My reasoning was they need it more.
Yeah.
My dad grew up as a Celtics fan.
Keith Jennings, man, so.
They didn't have yeah. Keith Jennings either. But no, my dad grew up a Celtics fan, so that wasn't really my thing.
Sure.
I was really obviously proud of him. But,
so he didn't try to raise you as a Celtics fan? Because right now I'm facing a similar conflict. I grew up in D.C., I'm a Wizards fan. I just had a daughter. Mm. I'm going to stay in the Bay Area. Do I raise her a Warriors fan, or do I give her my Wizard fandom?
Also, you are on a Warriors podcast, Scotty. This should not be a question.
Come on, it's
at
Warriors.
All,
it's easy. My dad never even thought of it.
Yeah.
He was Warriors. I grew up, he had already been here for 10 years by that point, and he kind of starting to adopt the Warriors, but yeah.
Help us with an ongoing argument, and then I promise we'll dig back into far more important things. Scott and I fight all the time about sports bigamous. I think you should have one team. You know, none of this. You've got an Eastern Conference team or anything else. Scott's got a different opinion. In fact, as he just announced to the Warriors assistant GM, he is, in fact, a Wizards fan as well. What do you think, man? Can you have more than one team or just stick to one?
You know, I think you can have more than one team, but it's got to yeah. be like 1A – by a long shot, and then kind of like 1B or C.
You know, right when we were getting along on the whole Mr. Jennings thing, stab me right in the back, Kirk. God, it is what it is, man. Far more importantly, I mentioned it. Let's get into it a little bit. The 30 under 30 thing. What was that list? How'd you get on it? I mean, that seemed to be
pretty
important.
I honestly don't really have a clue. I think a friend of mine must have put my name up for consideration, nominated me, something like that. And I got an email one day and said, you've been nominated. And I was like, is this a joke? And then I received another email or a call or something, and someone said, hey, you've been selected. And I was like, oh, well, I guess who's going to be on this list? And then they gave me the list, and I was like, this is definitely a joke.
I mean,
right?
Like huge, like LeBron James. I mean, this
oh,
list is no
It was
joke.
LeBron James yeah. and Gabby Douglas, and I was like, okay, these people all have gold medals. I do not. But it's cool. I mean, it's something I can put on a resume. I don't know if I could do anything. I've never been to any of the events that they have for it. But I guess it's a cool distinction.
You don't know Forbes is putting together like a over 30 people who do Warriors podcast list.
Yeah.
Do
you, I mean, you I have not been involved. I don't know. But you know what? You never know.
That's exactly
something
right.
Like that.
And you can nominate us. I mean, you know,
I would nominate. Well, we'll see how this goes. But yeah. I think about it.
Fair enough. I'm just going to wait for that email to show up in my inbox.
Yeah.
I'm going to start looking at it the second this thing ends. So yeah, we'll see how it ultimately goes. Final piece. You told us about most of your upbringing. I've stalked you to get ready for this. My understanding is you went to Stanford?
Yes, I was Stanford undergrad, right. 2010.
All right, and I say it only because we've got a claim to fame. Scotty was, in fact, a distinguished member of the women's basketball team there. So
all right.
Do you have any questions about that?
Let me add the caveat, practice player.
Never actually got into the floor.
Yeah.
No. Well, you must have been instrumental. They've had some great teams.
Exactly. You know, I mean, I take a lot of responsibility for their success.
Do you always want to work in sports?
I did. You know, I have, and I wish I had, because I just got the picture of it the other day. When I was in, I think it was third grade, they did one of those, like, I dreamer. I want to do this job type of thing. You're supposed to write down what your dream job is and why. And most kids pick astronaut or fireman or something. And I didn't believe my mom when she told me this. She found the original thing, and then we just got the picture 2 weeks ago of it. But I wrote that I wanted to be president and general manager of the Golden State Warriors.
Really?
What?
Yeah, and I'm telling you, I did not believe this was true until she showed me proof. And I was like, how do I even know what those terms are? At 7 years old or whatever. And
they let you just skip like four grades right then?
They should have. And I actually had some great ideas. We were going to trade for Shaq, Charles Barkley.
Oh.
I forget, maybe even Penny. We're going to get him back.
It's a pretty solid trade. You know,
so, yeah, it was a good deal.
I had a very similar thing. I wrote I wanted to be Keith Jennings. So, I mean, it didn't play out for me, but I tried hard. Now that you've done it, is this a dream job? Do you love this? Is it what you expected?
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, I think a lot of people when they come into sports, they there's a lot of non-glamour parts of it. Sure. I mean, you see all the cool stuff, and you want to go and meet the players and be on road trips and things like that. I was kind of pretty well prepared for that. Uh-huh. My dad had been involved with the Celtics. I've been around sports my entire life. I really wanted the other stuff. I don't find athletes to be that interesting. I've been around them my whole life.
Sure.
So I felt like I was pretty well prepared. And it's been a dream job, mostly because we've done pretty well. Yeah. I think it'd be a nightmare if we hadn't.
Yeah.
But it's been a lot of fun.
I mean, I can tell you, I've been a Warrior fan my entire life. I've suffered through, you know, decades, man, of just awful play. And, you know, let me say right now, honestly, thank you guys so much. I mean, being a part of this new culture has just been absolutely amazing and phenomenal. And I'm sure I speak for the fan base and literally saying thank you. This, my understanding, was not your first opportunity. You had an opportunity in Phoenix first, right?
Yeah, it's funny the way things work. Coming out of school, I was pretty much, I either wanted to go into sports or I wanted to go in kind of the tech startup route.
Yeah.
And so those were kind of my two passions. And I said, you know what, I should try to give the sports. The other stuff's always going to be there. I'm from the Bay Area. My dad's a venture capitalist. Sure. I know enough people that I can probably figure it. I have a Stanford degree. I can figure it out.
Yeah.
But sports, I wanted to go for it. And I talked with a lot of people and kind of through some, I knew Steve a little bit through family friends before. So I had reached out to him amongst other people. And he kind of, over talk with me, said, why don't you come and interview for something? And I said, sure. So I met with him. He actually had offered me like a season-long internship. With the Suns, and then he ended up resigning.
Okay.
You know, from his post as general manager, and so he let me know. He said, you know, they're probably not going to want to keep you around. You're one of my guys. Yeah. I said, no, I get it. Yeah. It was going to be a dream come true, but I totally get it. I'll move on to the next thing. And the ironic thing is now, Nick Uren, who's our special assistant to the head coach, and he kind of runs the video room. I would have worked for him.
Huh.
So I think he's a year older than me. So I would have ended up working for him. So it's what funny was it how like? All come around.
What was it like when Kerr's name began to surface for the head coaching job? I mean, as somebody who had previously wanted to hire you, was that something that fired you up?
You know, that part really didn't factor at all. It was more that I knew what type of person he was, and I knew the way he thought a little bit. I wouldn't say I knew him really well, but I knew him over the years, and I had a lot of respect for him and the way he had handled things in Phoenix.
Was there an existing relationship between the Lakeham family and Kerr before he came here? I didn't know that.
My dad's known him for probably 15, 20 years through a friend.
Okay.
And I think it was talked about when we hired him. It was a lot more made of it than probably should have been. But he knew him through golf. They used to go on a big golf trip.
That I do remember.
And Steve has a really good friend who's one of my dad's
best
friends.
Common people for golf. That makes sense. And also, let me give you credit. I love how you slipped in when he told you, you know, yeah, this job's not going to work out. No problem. It would have been a dream of mine. But you know, it is what it is. You know, it doesn't always work out. Obviously, we all know you spent some time with the D-League club over in Santa Cruz before you came here. That was, you were the full-time GM down there.
Yeah, and don't forget our first year in North Dakota.
No, okay.
I will never forget that.
Wow. Were you living in North Dakota?
I didn't live. I lived here, but I was there probably 9 times throughout the year. I'd go for 4 or 5 days at a time. And a lot of people ask me how that was, and I got to say, honestly, I loved it.
Oh,
it was a lot of fun.
Huh.
Bismarck was a really great community.
Huh.
And then people would show up for games?
Oh,
Like,
it was, you know, it actually, I felt really bad about it. It was there for 17 years. It was the longest tenured minor league basketball team, I believe, left. And we moved it. And so, I told them I felt really bad about it, but we kind of had to.
Why did you guys move it?
Geographic proximity was really important to our kind of development plan. And I think as you see the way the D-League has progressed in the last few years, there's not a lot of use for teams that are kind of tough to get to. There's a few teams left, but it's really hard to do what you want to do from a development phase. And not just the players, but everybody else, the control and the kind of synergy between staffs. Really hard to do from... mean, Bismarck, man, it took me 8 hours to get there. We include the 2 hours. There was no direct flights, 2 hour time change. And now I can drive down in 75 minutes.
Well, and we've already seen some of the benefit. I remember they sent back Kuzmic and Holiday just for a game. Then they immediately came back, 2 hours later? It's only an hour and a half drive. So that's got to be a huge advantage.
It's great. And also it helps with, you know, culture building.
Sure.
We're allowed to, it's California. So we're allowed to do things very similar. Now, Santa Cruz is different. Don't get me wrong. There's no other place like it, but it's still Northern California, and we're able to kind of transfer a lot of culture.
I went to school out in Santa Cruz, so I'm very I'm very familiar with the differences that have to be out there. Exactly right.
All right.
I was a banana slug, man.
Good.
What were you doing as the GM? I mean, we have a general sense of what that title means, but when you were in Santa Cruz, literally running the club, making all the personnel decisions, how'd you spend your days?
Yeah, you know, I actually was in Oakland most of the time. I drive down there a couple times a week. I had a great staff that worked with me, and they deserve a lot of credit for all the success we've had down there. But I focused mostly on the personnel. I did some business stuff. I had a lot of hands in getting the team to Santa Cruz and building that arena along with Jim Wireman, our president. So I was kind of all over the place. You know, during the season, I tried to focus on personnel and also that synergy between Golden State and Santa Cruz, figuring out how things were going to work.
What is it like working on personnel in the D League, given that I imagine all these guys, their goal is to get to the NBA. So while you maybe are trying to win a game or have a successful season down there, and it you know, would bode well for the job you're doing, at the same time, I'm sure your guys are just gunning.
It's a very delicate balance. You're right. It's tough. And I used to tell people we want three types of player. First of all, we do want to win. It's about developing players, but you can't develop unless you learn how to win. Because we want to win when we get up to Golden State. So we want to have that mentality, know what it takes to win. But I always said we wanted three types of players in the D-League. You want the guys who are going to be NBA players. You want the guys who are just going to be really solid and be there for a long time and be good teammates. And then you want the guys who are going to just become better and better and help them get, you know, to the next point in their career. So you always want someone pushing someone else. I believe in competition.
Sense. You strike me as a very competitive guy, which leads to this next question. If I was in your spot and I want to win down in the D-League and the big club, you know, going into the playoffs, whatever it is, sucks up one of my best players and I now am losing, I would be bitter as hell. Does that happen? I mean, did that happen to you? Did you have that reaction? Were you more mature than me?
None of that was surprising. It's happened. You know, I'm part of the decisions in Golden State. But I understand Golden State's far more important.
Yeah.
So it happened last year where we were very thin up front.
Yeah.
And, you know, we started the year in Santa Cruz having 3 7-footers, essentially. Mm-hmm. We had Dwayne Dedman, we had Hilton Armstrong, and we had Kuzmic for a lot of time. And it's very, very rare to have one legitimate 7-footer, let alone three.
Right.
So we kind of played a very different style than most teams in the D-League. And by the end of the year, Dwayne Dedman had been called up permanently by Orlando. They gave him a really nice deal.
He just played well against us.
And he played well against us.
Yeah.
So I was really happy to see that. I mean, I'm bummed that we're not the ones with them.
I hated him immediately. But, you know,
And then Hilton was up with us. And and Kuzmic, he had a monster game in the playoffs against LA. He had 18 and 24 or something, and 15 and 20 back-to-back games. And so we're going to play Rio Grande Valley, who had knocked us out in the championship the previous year. And Kuzmic all of a sudden had to come back because we had the playoff series starting against Santa Cruz, and we were very low on big men. I mean, Bogut couldn't play. And so we had Hilton playing minutes. We needed Kuz as kind of a last-minute, you know, just in case.
Sure.
And so all of a sudden we're left playing Lance Goldborn, who's all about, you know, call him 6'8", playing center. And Joe Alexander played a little center, and he had a broken wrist at the time. So totally on the fly, had to change our strategy. And you know, for a coach, that's really difficult.
Of course.
They want to win. It shows a lot about what they're trying to do. And Casey, who I think has done a great job, Casey Hill, our head coach, it was his first year as head coach, and he really, really wanted. And, you know, it was frustrating for me. He's like, okay, I get it. I get why we're doing this, but, like, I want to prove I can win. So we had long talks about, okay, we're going to have to change the way we play. This is a good thing to learn. This is a teaching moment for both of us,
right?
Especially if you as a coach. Something's been taken away. It's just like a big injury.
Exactly right.
What are you going to do about it?
That's exactly right.
We were able to win and make it back to the championship. Unfortunately, we didn't win the title, but and that's why I got fired. 2 years in a row, we lost in the finals. They said that wasn't good enough, so I got fired.
Well, I'll follow that up with, you know, even though my condolences for getting fired there, but obviously you've landed greener pastures. Now you're the assistant GM of the Warriors. What are your duties here, man? How do you spend your time?
This is actually my third year as an assistant general manager, and there's two of us. You know, I'm kind of all over the place, do whatever Bob Myers needs me to do, whether it's, you know, kind of overseeing our analytics department, whether it's helping with personnel decisions, contract stuff. I scout a lot of college games. I do a lot of international scouting, too. So it's kind of all over the board. I've done some things a little bit on the business side too, but it's all back, you know, to basketball.
Tell me about the analytics stuff, because I you know, as I said, I read a bunch of things getting ready for today, and what I found is that analytics, motion capture data, mm-hmm. I mean that kind of stuff. Tell me about that. How does it use? What kind of advantages does it present to you?
Yeah, I'm a believer in information. I think to make the best decisions you can make, you want to have all the information available, and this is just a tool that we use. Oh. And if it's something that we can help on margins around the edge and give ourselves a little advantage, we should use it. And it's also a very small percentage spend of what we're playing, spending on players to win games. So if we can create any sort of advantage, we should. And we've invested in SportView over the last 4 years. We were one of the first teams. And then we tried to learn a lot about what we can do.
Those are the cameras up in the rafters, right? So give me an example. What kind of information does that spit out to you, and how do you use it?
Well, it really spits out anything you want. You know, it's like 25 frames per second.
Yeah.
And you've got X, Y, Z coordinates on all the players and the ball. So you can kind of, whatever you can dream up, we can code in there. You know, you have to have the right coders and programmers to do
so
it.
So just like, where is Steph Curry making the most of his jump shots if...
Oh, we could go further than that. We could look at like if the arc on his jump shot is changing, in theory. We, you know, over the course of a few games, or even over the course of, like, does his arc go down, you know, between the first and fourth quarter every single game? Maybe we got a problem. I mean, we don't necessarily use that yet, but we have the ability to do that.
So how do you decide what you want to look into? I mean, is it, does it, like turnovers or something pop up? Does that make it?
We ask the coaches to guide us as much as possible. You know, we have a coordinator of basketball analytics, Sammy Gelfand, who actually started with me in Bismarck. And then in our first year in Santa Cruz, now he's up with Golden State for his second year. And his job is to stay close to the coaches, figure out what he does, a lot of reports for them, kind of self-scouting and kind of advanced scouting analytics reports. And so if they have a question, maybe it's not just a one-day thing. Maybe it's a long-term thing. Maybe it has to do with turnovers. He's done some work on turnovers with the coaches. He'll do that. And then there's obviously the personnel side. We'll look at a lot of data, but that's over the course of a year. It's not usually.
But I mean, the coaches and Kerr, he's open to this stuff. He's not like, you don't come to him with the report being like, look at how Curry's arc is, and then he's like, get that crap out of here.
No, we try not to. You know, there's sometimes things we want him to hear, and we'll tell him. But for the most part, we want to hear from him. What do you want to know? Is there something that's been bugging you? You know, are we not rotating correctly on defense, and we're giving up a bunch of threes from a specific spot? Let's try to find out why that is.
Yeah.
And the data can lead us to the right. It's not going to tell us the answer. It's not going to correct it. But it can lead us to help find where the problems are.
Sense. I mean, to bring us back to where you started this, the idea is that take as much information as you possibly can. If you don't use it, who cares? But if it's ever an advantage, why the hell not have it? And it doesn't cost
absolutely
that much to get
think
it.
About playing black. I love to use poker, blackjack analogies.
Graham is a degenerate gambler.
He's a degenerate. Okay, maybe we shouldn't talk about this.
You see how I'm sweating profusely now? Thanks, Kirk.
No, you know, blackjack, think about it. Like, you can play the game not having any clue what to do, and you may end up doing fine. You may not. You could play the game knowing what strategy to employ, when you're supposed to hit, when you're supposed to stay. But ultimately, if you have a ton of information, you know how many cards are in the deck, you know what the chances are of the next card coming.
Absolutely right.
I'm pretty sure that's legal, right?
Counting? Yeah,
it's frowned upon, but it's legal.
No comment.
Yeah, you know, there's things like that. And then there's also betting strategy. I mean, so you can go deeper and deeper in these things. So blackjack, to me, is a great example. It's a lot more black and white than basketball. But, you know, why wouldn't you want all the advantages?
That's absolutely right. How many teams are taking advantage of this? I mean, is it the large
majority? I think a lot of teams are. Yeah. I think a lot. I mean, SportView now, every team has. The NBA is paying for it. 4 years ago, there were five of us. But I don't know, honestly, how much each team really dives in. And another part of it's your coaching staff, too. You know, you've got to have a coaching staff who asks the right questions and wants answers. And you've got to have the people, you know, employed to actually go find answers.
Let me bring us in a different direction and ask you maybe not a difficult question, but an interesting one, hopefully. In a best case scenario, when you're dealing with a front office and you got to make a personnel move, whatever it is, making a trade, signing a player, looking at free agents, those kind of things, who do you feel should have the final say? Should it come down to just the GM? Should it be the owner? Should it be the best player? I mean, where should the buck stop, I guess?
Well, number one, you have to have a clear, defined place for that buck to stop.
Yeah.
I think that's defining who's in charge is very important.
Mm-hmm.
We've made the decision that that's our owner. That's my dad, Joe.
Yeah.
He paid a lot of money for this team. He's poured his heart and soul into it. You guys see him out there every night. He's very passionate.
I loved his reaction to Steph's game winner, by the way.
That was mild for him.
That was no joke.
Oh, my God. I can tell you, I've seen far worse. Remember, I used to have to play in front of him. I think he's earned that right.
Oh, yes.
And, but he has to get advice from certain people. And since Bob's here, but ultimately Bob was hired as the general manager. So, you know, we lean on him for what that ultimate recommendation is going to be. And I think my dad weighs very heavily what I hope he does, what Bob says. Otherwise, what's the point of hiring him?
Right. Exactly
and
right.
So he listens to everybody. But ultimately, it is his final decision because he owns the team.
We literally just had a surprise guest, I'm sure, just walking in for 2 seconds. But Bob Myers, the Warriors GM.
Say anything to the Warriors Huddle podcast.
Impressive. Yeah. The technology is impressive.
This is all a head fake. Really, I'm just recording it on the phone. These are just mock microphones.
Good. No, yeah. You got the right guy here. I lean on Kurt more than he leans on me. So whatever he says, I agree with.
Yeah, fair enough.
You only lean on me because you're taller.
Yeah, that's true. And the post. I lean on the line. Well, thanks for letting me chime in for a minute.
Yeah, thanks for doing it. Absolutely, man. What was it in Santa Cruz? Was it your final say? How'd you guys do that?
Yeah, no, I had full authority.
Yeah.
I would obviously talk to Bob and to Travis about what they thought we should do, and if it was a matter that did involve Golden State in some way, shape, or form, they definitely were involved in those. But they gave me full autonomy, and it's the same way, you know, we're doing it this year. Johnny West and Pat Sun took over as associate GMs for me, and they, you know, I think they were a little unsure at the start because
absolutely,
I'm still around.
Yeah.
But I told them, this is your guys' show. This is an opportunity for you guys to gain experience. You know, they say the hardest 6 inches in sports, moving assistant coach to head coach.
Yeah. Huh.
It's pretty hard on management too, because all of a sudden, you're not just advising people. It's your decision, and it matters.
Yeah.
And, I had full autonomy, though, in Santa Cruz. And But I leaned heavily, like I said, on. I had a lot of really good people around me. Andrew Loomis, guy I really care about. People probably don't know that name, but he worked under me as assistant GM there, did some stuff at Golden State. Now he's got a great opportunity in Detroit. So those are the type of things that make me really proud, or see those guys get their opportunity.
Let's jump into the team, man. They are the best record in the league after Memphis lost to Houston last night. We're a half game up. Can you stop and smell the roses? Are you enjoying this, or do you have to keep the eye on the ball constantly?
You know, I get in trouble for this a lot. I have a really hard time, like, being happy with success.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Like, until there's, like, a trophy or an end of the year and we're the last team standing, it's really hard for me to, like, feel good. It's kind of a blessing and a curse. And I actually have a quote I keep above my desk, and it's, I think it was Tim Duncan who said it actually, but it says, good, better, best, never let it rest until your good is better and your better is your best. And that's kind of a lot of what we strive for, perfection here. And the great thing, the dirty secret, is that you can never get there.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, to use the Santa Cruz analogy, I used to tell my guys the perfect season is one in which we win every single game. All 10 of our guys get called up. They all get called up to Golden State. Well, guess what? That's actually impossible. But, you know, so no matter, you know, when we hit one thing, the goal is to find the next thing we can be better at. And so I very much live that way. It can be very annoying. Because sometimes people are like, just be happy, take a victory drink, we won a big game, or, you know, aren't you happy that we made it out of the first round of the playoffs? I'm like, yeah, but that's not the goal.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, after Steph hit that game winner, are you're celebrating, or you're like, gosh, I can't believe it was even that close. It shouldn't have not been that close.
So I look a lot like my dad. I'm a little taller and I have more hair.
Yeah.
But otherwise, we look awfully similar. We have a lot of the same mannerisms. There's some very creepy pictures out there. Us sitting next to each other look exactly the same. You've seen him on the floor. You've seen how crazy. I am the exact opposite.
Huh.
We hit a game winner, and I'm like, put my fist out there. Yes, good job. I'm not really jumping around a whole lot.
I mean, as far as the pursuit of perfection as a fan, that's what you want to hear. You know, I mean, not for obvious reasons. But let me help you through that neurosis just quickly. What are you liking about the team? What's impressing you so far?
We've played well, and we seem to have a good understanding of who we are this early in the season. That's pretty hard to do.
What do you mean by that?
We know what we do well, and we know what we don't do well.
Yeah.
And we know what we have to improve on. I think that's really important. Knowing what you don't do or what you don't know is really important.
What is that for this team, do you think?
I think we can continue to get better as an offensive unit. I think it's pretty clear that, you know, when Steph leaves the floor, we still sometimes struggle.
Right.
You know, we've found some antidotes to that. Overall, our offense has been much better. You know, we went from dead last in passes last year to much higher up.
Yeah, number one in assists.
Number one in assists. We're moving the ball really well. It's pretty basketball. It's not perfect at all.
Sure.
We're not the San Antonio Spurs yet. We'd love to be there.
Yeah.
They've obviously had many years with the same coach and the same players. That helps. But I think we've shown signs of progress, which is big, and I think the best thing is no one's satisfied with that. And Steve, I mean, is maniacal about it. He's kind of wired the same way.
You know, when Steve was first hired, one of the things we talked about, you know, assuming you haven't been listening to every episode of this podcast, one of the things we talked about was that the beginning of the season was going to be remarkably important for multiple reasons. Mm-hmm. And one of them was if you can get off to this really fast start, you not only establish a relationship with the players personally, but you show them, look, this system works. The idea that they not only had a good start, but the best start in franchise history.
I don't think anyone could have believe it. I mean, I don't think anyone believed that was going
to
happen.
I sure as hell didn't see it coming. You know, I mean,
I just thought it'd be difficult. You know, you're transitioning to a new coach. You would think there's just going to be a guy who's never coached ever in the NBA. Yeah. So you would think, like, there's no way they're going to be off to such a hot start.
The guy's winning at an 88% clip. I mean, something tells me his lifetime overall percentage might not stay there, but who knows? Let me give you a harder one. I guess we're going to wait another week because D. Lee just had his hamstring taken a look at. It looks like they're going to wait till next Tuesday, but he's coming back. He's, you know, a former All-Star, a 20-10 guy. He's started his whole career except for the beginning over in New York. When he comes back, if it were left to you, who should start?
Whatever Steve says.
Nicely handled.
No, it's.
I thought I could fool you there, Kurt. No. That's very nicely handled.
No, you know, I have my beliefs, but it's not what I think doesn't really matter. I mean, I'll tell Steve, and he should definitely hear my opinion and everybody else's opinion, but ultimately it's his decision. Yep. We entrusted it. We paid him a lot of money to make these decisions.
Sure.
So he's going to make that decision. I think we'll be fine either way. David's a great player. He's a really important part of this team. You know, he's been with us now. I think he's the second longest tenured player left. Wow. After Steph, I believe, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
In 4 years, but
God, that's a lot of turnover.
Yeah. It's crazy.
What would you think Steve will decide on that?
I honestly don't know.
Yeah, it's so up in the air.
I don't
right
know.
Now.
Yeah, I think it's hard to make a decision before you have to.
Right.
Too.
Yeah.
You know, we're gonna play a few more games before he comes back, and then you want to see how he's feeling.
Yeah. What's your opinion? Are you going to tell us?
I can't tell you guys. Yeah. No, that's, you know, the way we work is we all get in a room, we fight, we argue, and then we all leave with the same idea.
A bunch of smart, competitive dudes who want to be heard. I mean,
yeah,
that's exactly how
absolutely.
The hell
it
should
be. But when we leave that room, we're all on the same page.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. Here is another one I imagine will ultimately be left to Coach Kerr, and this will show you how neurotic and constantly worried I am for no reason. Bogut has been amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly for the first couple of years he was here, he was our defensive hub. He's our offensive hub now for multiple reasons. I love that they're running it. But that orbital bruise was a subtle reminder, didn't miss any time, but was a subtle reminder that injuries happen with this guy. And I've been worried about how many minutes he's playing. He's up to 25 a game, and I'm just terrified. So, I mean, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, are you worried that he's?
I don't think that's a lot of minutes. Yeah. I mean, if
Bogut though,
yeah, you know, if it was like 35, maybe. And I get it. He's a huge guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
People aren't supposed to be that big.
Yeah.
That's what I always tell people. You know, there's a reason the big guys get hurt.
Yeah. Right.
People just aren't supposed to be that big and moving that fast and crashing around like that. But Bogut's an incredibly tough guy.
Right.
I mean, if. It's going to take something pretty serious to keep him out of a game. And you know, he's missed a bunch of games, but it's freak stuff. And the way he plays, maybe he's more, I don't know, maybe that's, you know, it happens more to him. But I'm pretty comfortable. I think we need him to play minutes. He's very important. We obviously want him to be healthy all year long, and, you know, we'll monitor things. We want all our players. I think Steph and Clay's minutes have come down a lot since last year, which is great for the course of the season. But, yeah, Bogut is really key to what we do. And I love the guy. I think he's... You know, I've been rooting for this to happen for a long time. Yeah. Just see him get back to what the player he was in Milwaukee before.
Yeah,
he
exactly.
As someone who rooted for Keith Jennings, you can appreciate this with me. The transformation of this team, you know, it's night and day. It's unbelievable. But one of the things I love so much is inviting Bogut in here because it's like going from owning like a miniature, you know, Doberman to having a Rottweiler. You know, like we have this real center now who sets the tone in a way we never had.
You're right. I can't remember the last time the Warriors had a real center.
Never. That's exactly right.
I mean, and no offense to guys, you know, like Eric Dampier or whoever
Felton
else it
Spencer.
Was. Felton Spencer. I mean, Donald Patrick Foyle. O'Brien. We tried, but, I mean, this guy is an absolute stud.
Right. There was
I mean, if people looked more at defense, he's an all-star. No question.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Well, and he sets the toughness. I remember during the series against Denver, there's some scuffle he had with JaVale McGee. They kind of back off. It looks like they might fight. And Bogut gives him that move like, oh, no, go ahead and punch
me.
We didn't have anybody bringing that to this team, you know, so it's phenomenal to have it. Another great portion of this early season is Mo Spates.
Oh, he's been great.
In your wildest dreams, did you see Mo doing this for this team?
You know, I always thought he had a chance to play a pivotal role. Mo is an incredibly talented player. I think all the guys on our team and our coaches would agree he's one of our most talented players. He's shown flashes of it throughout his career, but he's never really brought it together. And we've told him before, like, dude, you should be making a lot more money.
Yeah.
You should be making crap. The way, the things you can do, very few people your size can do that.
That's a smart motivational technique. That's a really cool way to approach that.
It's funny, people do like to make a lot of money.
Yeah, it's weird.
But no, Mo has come in with, I think he was embarrassed a little bit by the way things started last year. And, you know, he worked really hard all summer. He was there pretty much all of summer league, which is really rare for a vet. Yeah. I mean, we're fortunate. We have a lot of guys who tend to do that. Harrison Barnes and Draymond Green always come in, but Mo was there like the whole time working out with guys, and he came in such better shape this year. Yeah. And I think he had something to prove. And Steve, to his credit, gave him an opportunity. He said, you know what? You've earned a chance. Yep. Now go take advantage of it. And boy, has he taken advantage of it. He's been awesome.
I remember Mo hitting those 15-footers in Memphis, and I thought it was going to be this perfect addition to this team. Yeah. And then we never really saw it come in. But even then, even when I thought it was going to be a good come from Memphis, you know, 28 points. You know, I mean, it's just been unbelievable. This guy's averaging almost a point a minute. I mean, that's
and you know, we just talked about with Bogut, that toughness. Yeah. It's another thing we thought, you know, we have an unbelievable locker room. It's unlike any other locker room I've seen in any sport, any team I've been on. These guys are so close, and it's really rare in a professional atmosphere. But and I think Draymond said the other day, like, this is tighter than any college team I've seen. Like, this is a guy coming from Michigan State.
Have you seen these guys, like, the videos of them on the plane together?
Hilarious. And you know what? I've seen this before, too. I mean, in person with these guys, and it's the camaraderie is incredible. But, you know, Mo's really bought into that. And I think the other thing is, a lot of these guys are really nice guys.
Yeah.
And Bogut, you're right. He brought that credibility, that toughness, that meanness. Mo brings that too. He's a little dirty. You know, he's not afraid to get into you. Hell loves, he trash talks a little bit. He pushes guys around. We need a little bit
of edge. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So as the GM, and in fact, you beat me to the punch. I was going to ask you this anyways. Do you factor in personalities? When you're trying to put together a team, do you want, and how much of a role does that play? I mean, obviously, it depends on how great of a player is, but do you factor in how is this group going to get together? And,
absolutely. Huh. It's really important to us.
But how do you, that seems like a hard thing to evaluate.
Cause very hard.
You just, you're watching some guy play basketball, say for the Knicks. How do you know his personality? Do you just ask around? I mean, what? How do you figure that out?
You know, we've played around with personality tests and things like that. And, and sometimes it's helpful. We used to use a bunch of services. Sometimes it's helpful. But honestly, you know, you start scouting a lot of these guys when they're in college. And you talk to, you hear from family members, teammates, coaches, everything about them. So you know about them. So when sometimes when you're interviewing guys coming out in the draft, it's not about that draft. It's about, I need to have information about this guy for 5 years down the line. Yeah. We're looking to trade for him. We're looking to sign him. And
just put in the mental Rolodex.
You put in the mental Rolodex, you write it down, and things come back around more often than you'd ever believe.
When it's way more complicated, I would imagine, because it's not just one person's personality.
Oh, I mean, it's
you're
a
playing
lot.
Matchmaker. You got to make sure that all these things coexist. Yeah,
and I don't pretend to be like some mad scientist who understands. I know the A's, I read an article, they tried to quantify it. And I don't know if they were able to do it or not. We have to ask Farhan, and I know he was leading that, and he's now with the Dodgers.
Yeah.
So maybe I can ask him that. But no, I know they were trying to quantify chemistry, and I mean, to my knowledge, that's something very difficult. But we do try. I mean, we understand the types of people that we have, who's going to be good around them.
Sure.
You know, obviously, you want to tailor on your best players.
I'm taking a step back, and I apologize for it, but the A's thing made me think of it. You know, Billy Beane has made Moneyball amazingly well-known, and that is the baseball equivalent of the analytics stuff we were just talking about. Do you guys talk to him at all? Do you use his knowledge?
My dad knows Billy pretty well. He's known him for years. Bob knows Billy pretty well. I don't know how much they've asked him, to be honest. I follow everything they've done. I've talked to Farhan. You know, baseball is a lot simpler from a statistics standpoint. Yeah. And when I say analytics, there's statistics. They're two separate things to me. But statistics is numbers-based stuff, and baseball's a lot easier to quantify.
Sure.
It's just the field is a grid.
Right.
Things happen, and then there's a direct
and individualized plays.
Individualized. There's a pitcher. He's pitching. The ball goes somewhere. One batter hits it, and then it goes somewhere. Basketball's a lot harder. I mean, there's all these moving pieces, and it's constant, you know, play. But yeah, you know, we. Sure, there's similarities. And by the way, I'd like to point out, I am an A's fan. A's are absolutely my number one team. I'd like to make that very clear.
I respect the hell out of that. I'm a Giants fan. I won't hold that against you in any way.
Well, so. You've got the upper hand right now.
I grew up in Oakland as a Giants fan, and when I was growing up, you know, the A's were phenomenal. So this is a really different power dynamic for me that I'm trying to enjoy. Focus back on the Warriors, last question for this team. Is this a title team, Kirk?
It's a great question. Thanks, it's man. Early. It's early. I don't know.
I've been trying to tell Bram it's early on. We've had all these podcasts. I'm like, it's just too early right now.
Yeah, there's so many things that have to go right. You look at all the great teams, and one little thing has gone wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Oklahoma City. They've had a couple years in a row where a guy gets hurt at the wrong time.
Right.
So everything has to line up. And then I think Cuban even said it when the Mavs finally won. he said, you know, I would have thought that 2006 was the year we were going to win. But things lined up the right – guys got hurt for other teams. We were playing well. We got guys back at the right time. So you never know. I think, you know, the best thing we've done is we've given ourselves a chance. And to bring it back to blackjack, like, you put your card – the cards come out, you play your hand, and guess what? Either works or it doesn't. No, you don't have full control over it. Yeah. So –
no, just like you're saying, it requires a certain amount of magic, you know, and you can't control that. I know that we're running short on time, so let me jump to a challenge that got thrown out there by Ethan Sherwood Strauss today on Twitter. You know, who knows why I decided to talk your call and whether or not you want to follow it up, but this is directly from ESPN's Ethan Sherwood Strauss. Ask Kirk why he's ducking this one-on-one game.
Kirk, so I'd like to point out that I'm the one who brought Ethan into this. My disdain for poor refereeing in rec leagues was brought up online. I responded to it, and a couple of my friends actually jumped in on this. And my best way to get around it was to actually bring Ethan into it and start making fun of his jumper, which we've all seen.
Which, and to clarify what the fire quote was, why are you ducking this one-on-one game with old shot put over here?
Yeah, so it is a shot put. From? Yeah, so Ethan actually played with me this summer. I don't know if he mentioned that, but we brought him, a bunch of NBA people and a couple of writers, we played. We run a bunch of games during Vegas Summer League.
Huh.
Probably 20 people. So he played a couple games. So he's been on the same floor as me.
Okay.
If he wants the one-on-one matchup, I told him, bring your shoes and your clothes one day after practice and we'll go. We'll see what happens. I mean, I don't want to like be too cocky, but I don't think Ethan's getting that shot off. I don't think he's scoring.
Yeah, do you think say you played 11, is it 11-0?
It depends when I want to end the game. Yeah, I don't think he's scoring on. Maybe he'll get lucky, throw up some sort of sky hook or something. But I'll feel bad. I don't know.
It's unfortunate this isn't a video podcast because in addition to dropping that line perfectly, as he did it, Kirk slowly shook his head like it was just ridiculous that this was even out there. One more thing to address from Ethan Sherwood Strauss. Quote, also asking why he terrorizes YMCA refs, according to rumors. What's up with that, Kirk?
It was only one YMCA ref. Now, there's maybe other leagues that aren't YMCA leagues. But, you know, I'm very competitive. And if I feel that something is not going the way it should be on the court, I'll let someone know.
I respect that.
I know I now have that reputation. Apparently, it's going kind of viral. But that's fine. I can be nice to refs, too. I'll tell them when they've made a good call.
There you go. That's amazingly magnanimous of you, man. Nicely played. Scotty's got an anger problem, too, so you guys will get along.
Totally.
Kirk, thank you so much, man.
Thanks for having me.
Huge fun. We really appreciate it. I know you got better things to do than sit here at the Collie and answer our questions. So we appreciate it, and phenomenal job, man. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Hopefully we can have another one later in the season. You'll still be happy.
Hell yeah. Unquestioned.
Absolutely.
You know, I like to be bitter about a lot of things, so we'll see whether or not I'm still happy. But anytime you want to come, obviously, right. We'd love to have you. Thanks, man.
Sounds good.
Please remember, you guys, if you're looking for us on Twitter, we can be found at Warriors Huddle. Our email is warriorshuddle@gmail.com. We're still found on iTunes, where we'd love your vote. Get on there. Give us 5 stars, please. Even if you hate the podcast, we'd appreciate it. And our website remains warriorsworld.net, where our video can be found mainly because of the amazing work of our interns, Sumit and Jeff, who have just been killing it. Thanks for listening, you guys. Hopefully we'll see you next week.
I'm the real chef, Curry with the pot. What? Stove is getting hot. What? Olive oil by the box. What? Avocados for the guac. What?
Good.